Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's telephone conference of Allianz SE on the occasion of the publication of the business results for the third quarter of 2018. For your information, this conference will be recorded. At this point, I would like to hand over to Christian Kohl. Thank you very much, and good morning from my side. This is Mr. Groß. Welcome to the presentation of the results of the third quarter of Allianz. And I will hand over to Giulio Terzariol, our CFO, who will guide you through the results, and afterwards we'll enter into your questions and answers. So, good morning from my side. I'm delighted to be able to present to you the figures for the third quarter. Before we enter into that, on page 3, we have an overview for over the first 9 months of the year. And as you can see on slide 3, the results for the 9 months have been real great. Overall revenues grew by close to 7%, and that was driven by all segments. Above all, as you can see, that we have a good growth rate in property and casualty. Operating profit at 8.7 billion was approximately 400 million above the previous year's level. Especially those results were driven by property casualty, but also in asset management, we had a great development. In life health, the results declined a bit, but with 3.2 billion operating profit, we are well within the framework of our expectations. Figures like combined ratio, new business margin, cost income ratio have all developed very well, especially in the combined ratio. You can see an improvement of 49 base points due to the improvements in the expense ratio and also through an improvement in the basic loss ratio. In life health, you can see a growth in the new business margin of also an asset in the asset management field. We've seen a reduction of the XD expense ratio and also positive net inflows that we generated over the first 9 months, which is to say that our annual surplus grew by 7%. And if you look at the earnings per share, we have double-digit growth. So overall, a truly strong picture for the first 9 months of a year. Let us now come to page 5, where you can see the third quarter. And once again, we have a great picture here. Overall, or total revenues with grew by almost 10%, plus 9.8 internal growth, driven by all segments: 6% P&C, 12% life health, and asset management up close to 10%. The operating profit at 3 billion euros was 500 million above the previous year's level, and that was especially due to property casualty. I'll talk about the P&C development in more detail later on. And when it comes to the shareholders' net income at 1.9 billion, we were more than 20% above the level of the previous year. So overall, with 3 billion operating profit and close to 2 billion net income, the results for the third quarter were also very, very strong. Now coming to page 7, where you can see the development of the shareholders' equity and the solvency ratio. Our shareholders' equity has remained stable, so we had an effect from the net income of 1.9 billion. Of course, that counts into the calculation of the shareholders' equity. And on the other hand, we had the buybacks amounted to 1 billion, so that needs to be deducted, and then the unrealized gains and losses from a fixed income, we had a decrease there in 1 billion, and that was due to the fact that interest rates, especially in the United States, went up. But overall, net, there were no specific movements in our shareholders' equity. The solvency ratio has also remained stable. As you can see, it was at 229 points, which is more or less the level of June and also of the beginning of the year. So once again, great stability also when it comes to our solvency ratio. On pages 8 and 9, I can tell you more about this. So we had just some slight movements. There was a change due to the U.S. tax reform that cost us 1 percentage point in the solvency ratio, and then, as we expect, we had a contribution of the operating profit of 9%, that is pre-tax and before and also before dividends, so it's more or less what we also had in the previous quarters. Then the market impact, those impacts were basically flat. And then when we look at the capital management and management actions, we had minus 4 percentage points. That was due to the buybacks and also the dividend, which we will pay from the annual surplus. And then you can see minus 5 percentage points. That is the effect from the tax calculations, how taxes are being then being calculated on the different levels of the waterfall. So overall, we then have a solvency ratio with 229, which remains stable. Without the buyback, the solvency ratio would have been 3 basis points higher. Let me now switch to the individual segments, starting with P&C on page 11. Here we look at the growth rate. So we once again had a good quarter with an internal growth rate of 6%. And as you saw in the previous year, or for the 9 months over the year, we were at 5.9. And so I would like to mention Germany here, especially with plus 4.3%, growth stemming both from corporate business, but also from retail business in Italy. We had a growth rate of more than 1%. That is different from the past. I mean, we can see that quarter by quarter, we are moving into the right direction. And just for you to know, in the second quarter, the growth rate in Italy was 0.2%. And in the first quarter, we had a negative growth rate. So you can see the development step by step into the right direction. Then we have the usual companies such as Australia, Spain, CEE, which are growing traditionally. The only minus you will see is that when it comes to the United Kingdom, so in the UK, the situation is as follows. We're right now in the transfer of business between Allianz UK and LV, so that affected our growth rate a little bit. But if we only look at the corporate business, which is the core business of Allianz UK, so in this area we also grew by 4%. And then you can see the global lines, HCS and Euler Hermes, both at around 10%. There's a certain seasonality, but also if you adjust for the seasonality, the growth rates would have been at around 5% in those two OEs. So overall, a good picture, good growth rates for our P&C segment. And as you can also see per OE, most of the units have shown good and stable upward tendencies. Now page 13, here you can see the development of the operating profit in our property and casualty business. And as you can see, operating profit grew by around 500 million, driven by the combined ratio. The combined ratio improved by 3.8 percentage points, and in part that reflects the effect from the NatCat business. As you know, the previous year we had a high amount of NatCat burdens with 4.5%, and now we are at 2% NatCat impact, which is more in line with our general expectations. So the 2.5% of the improvement in our combined ratio still stems from this lower burden from natural catastrophes. And then you can also see that the expense ratio has improved, contributing 18 basis points to the combined ratio improvement. Then, on the other hand, the runoff result has gone down by 40 basis points. And if you add up all of those, we see an improvement of around 300 basis points, but we've improved by 380, so 80 to 90 basis points of additional improvement stemming basically from the improvement of our basic loss ratio and also from a lower burden from weather-related incidents or losses. So overall, a massive improvement in our combined ratio, of course, because of lower NatCat losses and because of the lower expense ratio, but not only because of this, our basic loss ratio has also improved compared to the previous year. And as you've seen before, the combined ratio for the 9 months is at 94%, which is in line with our target for the year. So we are well on track, I would say. And so after 9 months, you can see that we've already reached a goal of 94. And with this, I would like to move to page 15, where you can see some selected units, some selected OEs, where we show both the operating profit and the combined ratio. And if you focus on the combined ratio column, you see many minus symbols, which is good in this case, because that shows an improvement. So more or less in all of the countries, we had improvements. That is, as I said, a combination of an improved expense ratio, of lower burdens from NatCats, and also based on a better basic loss ratio. Just one this slight disappointment maybe, HECS, where we have a combined ratio of 104%, even though we had improved or less NatCats, so we're not in line with their expectations there, but that was driven by major claims. So we had some major claims and weather-related losses, and that set off the lower burden from natural catastrophes. But nevertheless, you can see an improvement compared to the previous year, and that is based on a better basic loss ratio and better runoff ratio also. But bottom line is 104% combined ratio. We can certainly improve that in the future. But having said that, overall for the segment, we've reached a combined ratio of 93.1%, so the results for the third quarter overall were highly satisfying. Looking at page 17, here you can see our investment income in P&C. That has remained more or less stable. Just a reduction of less than 20 million euros, and that can be traced back to a lower asset base. That's almost some pressure when it comes to the interest rates, but overall the investment income is very strong and stable. And with this, I would like to switch to our life and health segment, page 19. So we set ourselves three goals for the life health business. On the one hand, we want the new business value to be over 3%, and that is the case. That's basically no longer a challenge for us to be above 3%, and we also slightly improved compared to the previous period. Another goal is that the share of preferred products, as we call them, should be above 80% of sales, and we were at 84%, and then we also want to grow. And if you look to the bottom right, you can see if we look at the cash value of new production, we have a growth rate, NBP, a growth rate of close to 12%, driven by Allianz Leben in Germany, also by Italy, by the US. And the only negative development was in Asia Pacific, and that was due to legal changes in China. So we sold a little bit less in China in the third quarter, even though we're still on the growth track overall. So good figures when it comes to the new business margin, when it comes to the mix, and also when it comes to the growth in new production. Page 21 now, you can see the development of operating profit in life health. So overall, with 1.05 billion euros, we've remained more or less stable on the previous year's level. And what's important with that 1.05 billion, we were within the framework of our expectations. though our forecast was $4.2 billion for the year. If you divide that by 4, you come up with $1.05 billion, so right on track. The investment margin declined a bit, but on the other hand, we had an improved technical margin and also improved loanings and fees. So overall, we can say that the operating profit remained stable on the previous year's level. Page 23 now. Here you can see the development in the value of new business and also the operating profit for selected units. So when it comes to the value of new business, you can see a growth rate of 16%, and you can see many plus symbols. So when it comes to growth rates, so that's a good picture. When it comes to the new business margin, we also improved slightly, and in the operating profit, you can see that in the two large, that we declined in two large units, but that was more or less a normalization compared to the previous period. So overall, all large OEs, Germany Life and the US, are on track if you take our planning as a reference here. Page 25 explains a bit the investment margin. So as you can see, the margin in percentage points declined by 2 basis points, and that's got to do with a declining tendency in net harvesting and other. So other in this case are our results from derivatives and foreign exchange hedgings. So the cost for hedging, for the hedging in the US, went up, and when we do our hedging for variable annuities, so this year the prices went up there a bit and normalized more or less, and in addition we also purchased US dollars, US dollar denominated fixed interest papers in Europe, but we do some hedging for the US dollar exposure, and the cost for this kind of hedging has increased, and that explains why this quarter we had a negative result from net harvesting and other. And that also had a slight effect on our margin. On the other hand, we had counter trends, but overall we have a high asset base, so in total terms margin only declined slightly, and as you've seen before, with $1.05 billion, thanks to the contribution of the technical margin and loadings and fees, the operating profit basically remained stable. So we, in spite of that, we are well on track in this segment as well. And with this, I would like to come to our asset management segment now, page 27. So we have 2 trillion of assets under management, 2 trillion euros on the management, so that's a good threshold we've reached there. And if we look only at the third-party assets under management, you can see that we have around 1.5 billion, and the assets under management grew by around 2%, so that was driven by strong net inflows. In the quarter, we had 5 billion net inflows in AGI and 10 billion inflows at PIMCO. So a strong picture for the quarter. Which takes me to page 29. You see the increasing assets on the management also the increased margins, as you can see in the bubbles. So that, of course, leads to an increase in revenues. Overall, we had a growth rate, an internal growth rate of close to 10%. That was driven by PIMCO and above all by AGI, because we also received higher performance fees during the quarter, but also adjusted for performance fees, the growth rate of our revenues would still have been very, very healthy. So we can now come to page 31. Here you see the operating growth, which grew by a double-digit figure. also support the bid in this case by foreign exchange effects, because we're at 10.6 and adjusted for foreign exchange effects, we're a little below 10%, so good development. The cost income ratio, as you can see, went up a bit, but that's got to do with the integration of Allianz Capital Partners into our calculations. Adjusted for this, the cost or the expense ratio would have remained stable. And then if you would have included other adjustments, it would have gone down to 2%. So compared to the previous year, we have an increase, and that's got to do with some one-offs and also with the investment of PIMCO in marketing and sales right now, so that also for the future we will have good growth opportunities. Now the bottom line is 650 million operating profit, 10% increase compared to the previous year. So against even a difficult backdrop, we had a strong development in the third quarter. Which takes me directly to page 33. Not that much to say about corporate and others. That is just that shows our non-operating elements. And there was some development due to the developments in Italy, and overall that just creates movements between different items. So the impairments on page 35, you can see an amount of minus 189 million. 113 of this can be contributed to asset. But if you look at the non-controlling interests, we now have a positive contribution, and that is the counter effect, because this impairment is due to the minorities we have in this construction. So bottom line is there were some movements, but that weren't any major shifts. It was overall, though, this was a little going back and forth, but no major shift, which explains that the and net income was clearly above the previous year's level, and that's the consequence of the development in the operating units. And that takes me to the last slide, page 37. Here we have our scorecard for the renewal agenda. And as you can see, that looks quite well overall, but and have to continue, and then we can show you the final figures for the end of the year in a few months. But of course, for the fourth quarter, that's still lacking. But for the first 9 months, we can say, or we can have a certain confidence with which we can then go look forward to the next 3 months. And with this, I would like to ask you for your questions now.
Thank you, Mr. Tesario. So if you want to ask a question, please press the asterisk and number one on your telephone. Please ensure that your mute key is deactivated so that your signal can reach our devices. We would kindly turn your attention to the fact that while you're asking a question, the line will be permanently open and it will only be set mute once the next question will be taken. When you find that your question has already been answered, you can also withdraw it by pressing asterisk 2. And also, please press asterisk 1 in order to ask a question. And now we're waiting for a little moment to give all participants to signalize their questions. Now we have our first question that comes from Michael Filming von Börsen-Zeitung. Yes, good morning, everyone. I have three questions. First of all, about the forecast and also the revenue growth. And thirdly, on PIMCO, when it comes to the forecast, if the business goes on like that, you will have 11.6 billion euros in the overall year. Of course, this cannot be forecasted like that, but officially, in the information, you might determine to how that you achieve the upper end of that range. Why has this not been done? Are there any special activities or factors that are foreseeable because of the storms in Italy and also all by the measures that are going to be announced on 13th of November? So for the revenue growth, it has been at 10%, it's almost 10%. It's extremely high, as you said. You would have never thought that a few years ago. And why is that happening? Is it also because of a strong trend, or is that something that you believe can be stabilized over the years to come? Probably not the 10%, but maybe less. And also, in PIMCO, you said that there are investments. That's why that the cost ratio was going up, you said. So what is being done at the moment, and how do you get prepared for future growth? Thank you very much. Yes, good morning. Right. So in the forecast, no. There's no foreseeable negative effects. And also mentioning Italy, that is not particularly high for us. Actually, when it comes to the NatCat, so far in October, November, we believe that we are rather lower, below what we would actually expect. But you always need to stay careful, because December can also still become really intensive in terms of NatCats, in particular in Northern Europe, because that's where the storms are coming in that time. But there's nothing that we foresee or that we plan. And as you said, if everything continues like that, that would be no surprise if we would land in the upper half of the forecast. So there is no secret message we want to send. No, not at all. And the other topic related to the growth rate. Yes, I believe it's a combination, so to speak, as you said. So the economic trend, of course, is also a good reason. I mean, so definitely supporting us. But it's not only the economic trend out there, but what has changed? If you take Germany, Germany is growing with 4%, and that was not the case in the past. And the German unification is in, the unit in P&C is a big unit here. Italy used to be negative, but now turned into positive. And so in P&C, we're always around growing around 3%. And looking at Germany, and we have higher growth rates than Italy, and then automatically we would reach a different level. So it's a combination of economic trend plus of the activities we're performing by being able to achieve a higher growth rate. And then the topic around PIMCO. PIMCO is investing into IT. For example, in Austin in Texas, they hired a lot of people for IT, and that also applies to normal IT. And so we want to improve our IT setting and in order to support operations. But it's also about artificial intelligence. It's a combination of better IT, better processes, but also looking ahead into the future. They're also investing in distribution marketing, and we are also investing into new strategies, which is quite important, particularly strategies into alternative areas. That means, first of all, people will be hired, and then the fees, and there comes a bit later performance fees. So first of all, you would have a cost burden, but in 3 to 4 years, we should receive more performance fees. PIMCO is fine, and so then we can do this with a lower cost ratio if that would be necessary. But currently, we believe it is important that we invest into the business to have a good growth rate for our revenues into the future and for the profit as well. I think that's it, right? These were the three questions. Yeah, may I just ask an additional question, Mr. Tesario? Sure. So the growth rate, you could imagine in the midterm, continuing this cultural effect that you cannot always trust. I'd say in P&C, I would still expect that we have 3 to 5%. That would be a growth rate for me that we could expect. And then in life insurance, I would also expect that we can grow about 5% in asset management. It's always a bit more difficult, particularly when there are, fluctuations on the capital markets. But, looking at a normal scope, I would say that asset management, we should be able to have between 5 and 10% growth. But in asset management, you have to be more careful because, for example, in the third and the fourth quarter, So the net inflows at PIMCO are rather negative, because interest rates are increasing. So in the case of asset management, the volatility come in relatively quickly. But if you ask me, I would expect that if we don't wait everything, that we would turn towards 5%. Thank you very much. You're welcome. Next question, please. Thank you very much. Now we have our next question comes from Stefan Weyer from DPI-ISX.
Good morning, Mr. Terzariol. I would like to know about the profit target. It sounded in summer a bit more confident when you said last summer when you say if it continues like that, we're going to land in the upper half end of the profit range. Have you become more careful, or is it just a feeling that I have? Further questions relate to losses in Q3. So Talanx had to get their profit target and obtain it and collect it because they had high damages and the dam in Colombia and the motorway bridge in Genoa in terms of industrial insurance. So you also, you know, included with in two areas in the bridge because you also have a stake in the Autostrada in Italy. Can you tell us about the burden both in the cancellation in Colombia and there's also the insurance in the bridge? And what was the highest loss that you obtained in the third quarter anyway? Okay.
No, I was not more confident in the summer. So I'm more confident today than in June. But you can calculate yourself where we're standing. That means so it's quite likely that we land in the upper half. And as regards Autostrada in Italy, yes, we concluded an insurance policy and we're part of a trust and a group. So what we booked at the moment on the insurance side is 20 million, even a bit less. That's what we booked, and you saw that the effects on the net income coming from the capital investment is less than 20 million. So if you calculate the tax on the loss that we booked, we landed an amount that is saying it's like 30 million annual surplus. That's quite okay. And then the question, your question of what was the biggest net cast loss in the third quarter, I can tell you that was a tornado in Iowa. 105 million was the amount. 105 million, a tornado went through a city from Pella. And that is damaged a facility or destroyed a facility completely, a plant. And that's why we had a major burden there, major loss amounting to 100 million. So basically that is a major burden from the NatCat scenario. Otherwise, our losses from NatCats in the quarter were very low. So we still have 50 million from a cyclone in Japan. And that basically, these were the two big cases. All right, thank you very much. I did not really understood completely about Genoa, you know, how that is separate. Well, 20 million roughly, before tax. You know, you always have to calculate the pre-tax then, and capital investment. And you can also see the document, with after tax, with 17 million euros. That is 17 plus 20 million after tax, and so that's a 30 million burden for the annual surplus. So, putting it all together, we're roughly at 30 million. Okay, thank you very much. You're welcome. Now we have our next question coming from Alexander Hübner from Reuters. Yeah, I have two questions. The first one connects to what my colleague just asked already before. Further to the 17
billion as a co-ownership of Autostrade that your firm used as impairment. What is this related to? I mean, is that linked to an expectation that Autostrade is going to be becoming a public company and or government-controlled company, and what the value behind it? So what is the expectation? The second question about operating business and this announcement that Mr. Bethe talks about productivity gains, and that has always been his target. How would you measure these productivity gains, and where would you see them? Right. With Autostrade per l'Italia, actually, as regards the dividends and the future dividend, our expectation is that we continue to receive dividends. However, basically, so the equity costs have been adjusted because the uncertainty about the dividend is bigger. And now we have to make a fair value calculation because of that. And we simply checked what happens with Atlantia, that's a holding company, which is the biggest owner. So the shares went down, the share price went down. So we said, okay, if the share price of Atlantia goes down, we should definitely expect that the present fair value of our participation will also decline. But it's not because that we believe that we don't get the dividend, no, but we're just saying the uncertainty that we get the dividend is, has become higher because of the financial market. That was the reason for having this impairment. So we have an increase of the discount rate because of the uncertainty instead of having which is based on the assumption that we get less dividend. So for the cost and the productivity, you can easily see that. When you look on page 14 of the presentation, where you see the cost ratio for the 9 months in P&C, so that went down by 60 basic points than in the previous year. So that means you have a clear indication of 60 basic points less, and that we became more productive. In asset management, you can also see that the cost-income ratio goes down. So there are a few key figures where there's always new sensitivity, but basically, they're developing in a manner where you can clearly see there's a productivity gain behind it. Thank you.
Next question, please. Thank you very much. Our next question will be by Herbert Fromme of Süddeutsche Zeitung. Good morning. I have two areas of questions. First of all, AGCS, you were a little disappointed. Now, AGCS hasn't performed that well for quite some years, and the question is, in how much does the U.S. corporate business play a role in that you've handed over to it? And with the 104% combined ratio, what are you doing? Do we have to expect any changes in the management or the structure to deal with this? And also, when it comes to AGCS, you're saying in that the volumes are increasing in alternative products, mid-corp, financial lines. Does that also mean that they don't grow in the corporate business, which is their core business? And on the other hand, the German P&C market, I'd be interested, you're talking about good growth and positive prices, and you also mentioned motor business. So is that to say that the motor prices in Allianz increase in the third quarter, the unit costs? Is that something you could take out of your words? Because in the market, the prices have been stagnating or even decreasing. What's your experience in this? Okay, let me start with Germany. Well, the prices in the German motor insurance are stable. I've done the calculation myself. I just took the gross premiums, the gross premium income of Allianz Germany Motor, divided by the risk there, and the ratio went up. Well, of course, cannot adjust all of this, but Allianz Germany confirms that the figures have remained stable. So if I do a high-level calculation, I get a slight increase in the average premium, and if we adjust it for exposure, then prices have remained stable. And just for you to know, the combined ratio in motor for the 9 months in Germany slightly increased compared to the previous year. So overall, if the question is, do we buy growth, does profitability decrease? The answer is no. The figures don't show such a tendency. That is when it comes to Germany. One follow-up. Could you give us the combined ratio for the 9 months? Well, I wouldn't like to state this, but it's clearly below 100%. It's between 90 and 100, let's say. And that is what I wanted to say about Germany. Now, HECS, yeah, definitely the U.S. Business had an effect here, the corporate business. And I would say it cost us about 2 percentage points in combined ratio, what we have there. But we've started a restructuring program, especially when it comes to the IT, which is now going on and should be closed by 2021. So by 2021, we'll see where we stand. And if everything goes according to plans, we should see a clear improvement by then. If we cannot implement the measures by 2021 that we've thought about, then we would certainly have to ask ourselves the question what this means. But right now, we are focused on the restructuring we're doing there, and in 2021, we'll then have to take a decision what else we need to do. Okay? And growth in corporate business? Sorry. It's not just, I mean, if you look at the growth rate of 9.6 and adjust for the adjust here, then we'd be at around 5%. So that is to say, growth doesn't just come from mid-corp and financial lines, but also from other areas. So I'd say right now we see growth in different segments of HECS, but we just presented or pointed out where we see more growth than in other areas, but in general we have a growing tendency across the board at HECS. Thank you very much. We will now have the next question by Olaf Storbeck of Financial News. Good morning. I have another question on the productivity increases that you mentioned. Could you give us a feeling on how large the effect was on the operating profit in the third quarter or across the 9 months? Because cost expense ratios are always influenced by all kinds of factors, top line costs and so on and so forth. Well, I think it's a combination, so to answer that. First of all, if the expense ratio goes down, it's always a combination of growth in contributions, in premiums, and also of cost management. That's true. So what is the effect now of the improvement of the expense ratio on the operating result? Well, I would say the 18 base points, so if you multiply them by 12 billion net premiums, you'll come up with 100 million improvement in operating result because of this improvement of the expense ratio. And what's the effect of premiums going up and having costs under control? Well, I would say with the growth rate of 6%, as we've seen, I would say two-thirds probably stem from the premium growth and one-third will stem from cost management. But I wouldn't separate those 2 points, you know. You have to just see the improvement of the expense ratio. That is the important point. And that is the improvement in productivity. So the effect on the operating profit of productivity gains would be, from my point of view, there for 100 million euros. That's in the third quarter? Yeah. We had 12 billion in net contributions. We improved by 18 base points, so that amounts to approximately 100 million in improvements when it comes to the operating results. Thank you. So once again, to remind you, if you want to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone, and we'll now have our next question by Jean-Philippe Lacour. Please go ahead. Good morning. Two questions. Some days ago, Munich Re published its results, and they suffered a bit by hurricanes and typhoons. And so how can you explain that Allianz was relatively unaffected by those net cats? I mean, last year, even though Mr. Bethe said 2017 was the worst year in the whole insurance industry when it comes to net cats, but a general question, why Allianz wasn't that hit that hard? And then a topic that hasn't been mentioned so far, that is share buybacks. I think you had 6 billion euros that you spent on share buybacks in the two waves, and the last program ended in September, and 1 year ago, Mr. Wemmer, your predecessor, says the solvency ratio was at 227%, so a reason to hand back money to the shareholders. Now you can see that the solvency ratio is at 229% in spite of this program, so the basis would be there for a third wave of a share buyback program that you could offer to your shareholders if there's no better usage, say, of the your coffers and the money in your coffers that you have there. So could you please give us make a statement on this, whether you have any plans regarding share buybacks? Okay, let me start with the natural catastrophes in my answer. I think we have a different setup than for example Munich Re that you've mentioned. So you always have to see what is the footprint, and they are a reinsurance company. We're not a reinsurer, so I think we have a different footprint in that. And then we're also very cautious when it comes to underwriting, especially in some areas of the U.S. So here, their risk appetite is pretty low. So it's the general setup of the company, and then probably also a different risk appetite for certain areas, and quite simply a different business model because we're not a reinsurer. That explains why we've been hit less than other insurers in this case. When it comes to the share buybacks, I said 3 billion this year, 3 billion last year, correctly, and certainly we have the necessary liquidity and the capital to do further buybacks, and as always, we'll look for the different opportunities that are open to us, and if we then have all the information to take a decision, then we will see what whether we continue to do buybacks or maybe we'll find an alternative on how to use our liquidity and capital. So just to repeat, this is not an ATM, you know, where you get cash each and every quarter. That's not the way it works. But we have the necessary capital discipline, and our return on equity, we want to keep it stable or at least or even improve it. That is to say, we need to handle the capital we have quite well, and we need to get a good return on the capital we're investing. And if we can't get the good return on the capital, then we like to give some money back to our shareholders. That's true. So follow up, will we get more precise statements on the 30th of November? Well, just come on the 30th of November and then you'll hear what we have to say. The 30th of November, that's still 20 days out, so we'll see. So we have some line troubles here. Yeah, but when it comes to acquisitions, will we hear more of this on the 30th? Well, my answer is on the 30th of November, we will talk in general about the strategy for the future, and we'll certainly address the question how we think about our capital utilization, and we'll certainly talk about our view of the situation. But you don't have to expect that we will say we will do X or Y, but we'll certainly talk about capital management so that you get an idea about how we think about the situation. It's more about our mindset for the future, not about any major announcements. Thank you very much. Okay, I think, do we have any further questions in our queue? No, we don't have any further questions right now. Okay, then I would like to thank you for your participation, for your questions and your interest, and I wish all of you a great weekend. Thank you very much. Goodbye. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's press conference. We would like to thank you for your participation and wish you all a great day.